I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to catch up with, we can say it, even though it's sort of a proprietary for Andy and Randy, Smokin' Joe Patrick. He joins us here on the Wade4.com hotline, our Falcons insider. I mean, we're going to talk to Coach Raw tomorrow, Joe, but I mean, it's hard to kind of, I don't know, dance around the subject when everybody and their uncle sees Kirk Cousins is not looking close to 100%.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I would say it was kind of awkward talking to Raheem on Monday after that game, especially not just the Kirk Cousins conversation, but honestly, having to ask about some of the splits that we saw in that game in terms of, you know, them passing literally 100% of the time when they're in shotgun. I mean, those are the kinds of splits that try to rub their nose in it, but like, that's like, you wouldn't see that kind of a split in a high school game. And then to have to ask the coach about, you know, is that part of the scheme and things like that. But listen, it was just a rough day overall offensively for everybody. And I will say this, while I don't think it was the greatest called game by Zach Robinson, his first, and I'm sure, you know, he'll obviously have many more to make amends for it, I will say that with the team struggling in that second half to pick up first downs and really kind of get in any sort of rhythm, I think that that is where you kind of get in maybe a little flustered and you're just trying to figure out any call that's going to work. But certainly nothing kind of went according to the script the way the Falcons had planned it on Sunday.
Joe, one thing I've been very curious about, and I've questioned it on the air several times since the game, you bring in Charlie Warner to do exactly what was needed to be done against T.J. Watt. In your best guesstimation, why did they not do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, they... You had to know that that was going to be a problem matchup for you. And, you know, it felt like just watching the game from the press box, he's in such a wide nine alignment there, and he's being so aggressive coming off the ball. It felt like there may have been opportunities in the screen game to maybe, try to capitalize on some over-pursuit or some over-aggression there. But they weren't really able to do it. There was some screen game, and honestly, some of the screen game was some of the more, I think, maybe optimistic aspects of the play calling and the execution. But still, there just wasn't that kind of rhythm, especially in the passing game, that you would have wanted to see. You would have wanted to see Kirk kind of, you know, again, get that tempo in the offense. But they had on that first drive, they got it going a couple times, but it just never felt very consistent. It never felt, especially in the second half, like there were, frankly, open receivers or open running lanes. And I would, again, kind of go back to those tendencies and, you know, saying that the Pittsburgh Steelers clearly went in the halftime and saw what the Falcons were doing really well and adjusted to it. And therefore, there just weren't really, you know, gaps to exploit because of how prepared the Steelers were. So T.J. Watt, listen, he's a guy who's going to be a game wrecker for a lot of other teams. Raheem Morris said our plan was to not make him a game wrecker, and he wrecked the game. So, right. So, you know, when you don't accomplish that, then you're probably not going to win against that team.
And we said it earlier as Joe Patrick joins us, guys, on the Wade4.com hotline, our Falcons insider, that it's almost like he was in the huddle because, you know, they went to the silent count and he was just totally keying on Dahlman's, you know, head nod, and you knew when the ball was coming up. He was literally had like half a step, and a half a step on McGarry is never going to end up good for this offense. And you just touched on it. From where I was sitting, I'm up in 342 on the 10-yard line for watching the routes develop. When there was time, I don't think the receivers were getting that separation. And that was one of the questions some folks said about the Falcons. Did we do enough to address the wide receiver room in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, right, that's it. There was not separation. And you would have thought there would have been. And, like, for me, it does come back more to the Steelers kind of understanding what was going to get thrown at them, especially in that second half, because – like, we've seen Drake London create separation. Like, you know, he doesn't create a ton of separation because he's more of a big body receiver. But, like, I've seen Kirk Cousins get him the ball a lot during training camp. We've seen him, you know, make great catches when there was, frankly, a lesser caliber of quarterback play here. And there just wasn't that consistency. I mean, for only 5 catches for 41 yards between he and Kyle Pitts together, you know, that is not what you're looking for. That the way that this Falcon team is going to be successful is for those guys – to obviously get their numbers. Those things are tightly correlated together. And I got to say, the other thing with T.J. Watt, you know, I think Kyle Pitts and the way that the Falcons tried to steam up defending T.J. Watt with Kyle Pitts chipping, I don't think that was helping McGarry whatsoever. On some of the replays that you've seen, it almost makes it look like Pitts is just kind of in the way in allowing McGarry to actually get hands on T.J. Watt and made life kind of more difficult. So I think they're going to have to go back to the drawing board on some of these protections and try to figure out how they can better stop these similar types of pass rushers, because they are going to see Micah Parsons later in the year when they play the Cowboys. They're going to see some more of these premier edge rushers in the league, and they've just got to find a better way, because you know that teams in the future are going to try to match up that pass rusher on Caleb McGarry like teams have done last year, and they're just going to have to work through some of these things. And who knows with what they're trying to do out of the pistol. Seems like they're trying to develop basically a pistol-heavy offense for Kirk Cousins to work out of, which I think can work, but it's just not going to work the way that they were trying to make it work on Sunday with how predictable they were.
The next 2 weeks, Joe, before they see the Saints, you got to worry about up the middle, because you got Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, and Chris Jones coming up in the next couple of weeks. What can they do to help out Drew Dahlman, who I also thought had a poor performance against Cam Hayward?
Yeah, there's so many things that go into this. I do think that playing so much out of shotgun and pistol is probably going to hamper a little bit of what Drew Dahlman does best, which is get to that second level and move kind of horizontally in that wide zone offense. It's going to be harder to run those types of plays out of those formations. And then also as the center, you're just not able to get the same kind of leverage and movement out of your stance when you're in snapping in shotgun as you can when you're just snapping with a quarterback under center. And we've seen Drew Dahlman struggle with some of the high snaps, especially a couple of years ago. And that can be a tendency when you're trying to get out of your stance too quickly as the center, that snap can tend to fly up and potentially over the quarterback. So that has obviously been.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A problem for him, but I think that overall, this ground game can get working, but they've just got to get back to the basics and doing what they do best, which is making these guys move horizontally across the field. When this team was at its best on the ground under Arthur Smith, running that wide zone, that's really where they excelled. Even guys like Caleb McGarry, you think of Caleb McGarry as this big mauler, but he's actually at his best when he's kind of on the move and getting going, especially wide, and that way those running backs can really kind of burst those explosives up the field. So that's really what I hope to see this team get back to in the future.
Forward good, backwards bad. For me, I thought you didn't miss anything when Storm Norton filled in for him at times last year. It is a Smoking Joe Patrick, Falcon Insider. One more thing on the offense, we'll flip over to the D. It's all about the D here on Dukes and Bell. But Penix Jr., I understand it. The quarterback controversy, I never understood the move in the first place, either go one or the other. But if you got the insurance policy, why don't you freaking cash it in? Give him all the reps in the preseason, because you don't want to put Cousins out there. And then Raheem is, again, big, strong, dynamic personality. Just say, look, Cousins is our quarterback. He's not ready. We're going with a guy who gives us our best chance right now. Done. And if Penix balls out, you deal with the consequences later. But my argument, Joe, Penix could have gone out there and given you two interceptions and had the ball snapped into the emotion man.
Yeah, maybe. I think that Penix, in the context of that Steelers game, I definitely think there were probably moments where Penix is better, just physically more capable of firing off a pass to the to the boundary when the pressure is kind of on him and he's not able to step into the throw. He's just got that naturally stronger arm. It's obviously not nearly as quick of a release as Kirk Cousins has, but I do think that he would have been able to better handle some of the situations that Kirk was facing in that game Sunday. But I also think that there's just aspects of the game, and there's just what it means to be a quarterback. Kirk Cousins is light years ahead, and I do think that if Michael Penix was in there, I know that it's very easy to think that if he was in there, he's just going to throw the ball around. There's a lot of operational things that Kirk is able to do with this team that I'm going to have mud on my face a little bit here, because one of those things was putting the guy in motion that goes off of Ross Dwelly's legs and turns the ball over. But there are aspects of the game where I think you would not like to see Michael Penix in there. Or if he were to have played, you would have understood why Kirk Cousins is maybe the better quarterback at this point in time. But listen, this is the kind of bugaboo that the club has right now, and it's what comes with the territory when you draft a player like Michael Penix, a quarterback in the top 10, when you already have one, which is that these conversations are rightfully going to come up. Like, fans are rightfully going to wonder, you know, what would be the situation if the other guy was in there. And, you know, that's just the nature of it. And I know that they're going to kind of get annoyed whenever those questions do come up and right. kind of roll their eyes at it. But that's the bet you made.
You got it. You have redundancy in a position you haven't had for the last 2 years. So why not, you know, use it real quick? Just as a postscript on that comment, you would have the blind side of Michael Penix protected by Caleb McGarry, and that's a scary proposition.
All right, Joe, on the defensive side now, a lot is being made of A.J. Terrell giving up a couple big plays to George Pickens. But if you go back and you look at the numbers, as we like to say here on Dukes and Bell, it only was for about 80 yards. So do you think this is being overblown, or were you concerned about A.J.'s performance?
I'm not concerned about A.J.'s performance. What is interesting about A.J., and this is just purely anecdotal, but I feel like I can count so many number of times where he's like in a receiver's hip pocket down the field, and they're still able to make the catch somehow. Like, and he's very good at sticking with, you know, receivers, but for whatever reason, it's that ball playing ability that, like, for example, a player like Clark Phillips has that in spades, and it, you know, AJ just doesn't seem to have those natural instincts, and it's probably one of the reasons why his interception numbers in his career haven't been maybe what they could have been otherwise. There are a lot of things that AJ brings to the game that, you know, helps this defense tremendously. He is their best corner. I do think that he's a great matchup for a lot of receivers in this league. Obviously, some particular guys get the best of him, but for the most part, you're not going to find too many corners better than him. And he does add a lot in the run game in terms of just being a physical tackler and willing to put his body on the line and all those types of things. I'm not concerned about AJ. He does have a tendency to get beat from time to time. But you know, he's going up against a great quarterback, and I wouldn't say it was like he wasn't getting beaten consistently. You know, it was just a couple times downfield. I'm sure he would tell you he wanted to do better there, but I don't think that that's an issue for this team at all. In fact, I think that you got to be really happy with what you saw overall defensively. I thought Arthur Smith called a good game and kind of protecting or kind of hiding a lot of the deficiencies that the Steelers had going into that game with their offensive line and their quarterback. But I thought the Falcons did a good job in just, you know, bending and not breaking and continually allowing their offense a chance to get back on the field. But, you know, when you aren't producing the offense, you aren't going to get the result you want at the end of the day.
And just finally, I thought that, you know, for a guy who's just recently come to the team, I thought Judon got stronger as the game went on.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely seemed to get more comfortable as things went on. Justin Simmons as well, I thought, played pretty well. Again, they weren't facing anything extraordinary in that passing game that the Steelers were presenting, but you got to like Judon kind of getting himself involved with the half sack with Grady Jarrett there. I think it's good so far. It's just unfortunate. I want to see what this defense looks like when they're able to actually bring more pressures. When you're going up against a guy like Justin Fields, basically the scouting report on him, and I think that they proved correct, was you just don't blitz him. You sit back, you shadow, you know, you kind of spy him with everybody basically on that defense playing in zone coverage and just try to, you know, limit the yardage. And they did a good job of that. I want to see what this defense looks like. And I think we're going to probably see a little bit more of it this Monday against the Eagles, where you can bring some pressure and try to, you know, fluster these quarterbacks.
All right, big man. We know you'll be covering this. We'll get into it later in the week. Hopefully we can bounce back. Just a really, really tough road to hoe when you talk about Philly and being on the road against those animals and the Eagles, too. All right, brother, man. Have a good weekend. Thanks, Joe.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.